Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Okay, so we're on Canto 4, Chapter 22, Prithu Maharaj's meeting with the Kumaras, and it's text 18. Sanat Kumaru Vacha. Sadhu Pristam Maharaja. Sava Bhuta Hitatmana. Bhavata Vidusha Chapi. Sadhunam Matiri Drishi. Sadhu Pristam Maharaja. Sarvabhuta hitatmana. Bhavata vidusha chapi. Sarunam matiri drishi. Sanat Kumaru Vacha. Sadhu Pristam Maharaja. Sava Bhuta Hitatmana. Bhavata Vidusha Chapi. Sadhunam Matiri Drishi. Sanat Kumaru Vacha. Sadhu Pristam Maharaja. Sava Bhuta Hitatmana. Bhavata Vidusha Chapi. Sadhunam Matiri Trishi. Ladies. Sanat Kumaru Vacha. Sadhu Pristam Maharaja. Sarva Bhuta Itatmana. Bhavata Vidusha Chapi. Sadhunam Matiri Drishi. Sanat Kumaru Vacha. Sadhu Pristam Maharaja. Sarva Bhuta Itatmana. Bhavata Vidusha Chapi. Sadhunam Matiri Drishi. Sanat Kumara Uvacha. Sanat Kumara said, Sadhu, saintly, Pristam, question, Maharaja, my dear king. Sarva Bhuta, all living entities, Hita Atmana, by one who desires good for all, Bhavata, by you, Vidusha, well learned, Cha, and Api, although, Sadhunam, of the saintly persons, Mati, intelligence, Idrishi, like this. Sanat Kumar said, my dear King Prithu, I am very nicely questioned by you. Such questions are beneficial for all living entities, especially because they are raised by you, who are always thinking of the good of others. Although you know everything, you ask such questions because that is the behavior of saintly persons. Such intelligence is befitting your position. Please repeat. Sanat Kumar said,
"My dear King
Prithu, I am very nicely questioned by you. Such questions are beneficial for all living entities, especially because they are raised by you, who are always thinking of the good of others. Although you know everything, you ask such questions because that is the behavior of saintly persons. Such intelligence is befitting your position. Purport by His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada. Maharaj Prithu was well conversant in transcendental science, yet he presented himself before the Kumaras as one ignorant of it. The idea is that even if a person is very exalted and knows everything, before his superior, he should present questions. For instance, although Arjuna knew all the transcendental science, he questioned Krishna as if he did not know. Similarly, Prithu Maharaj knew everything, but he presented himself before the Kumaras as if he did not know anything. The idea is that questions by exalted persons put before the Supreme Personality of Godhead or His devotees are meant for the benefit of the general people. Therefore, sometimes great personalities put themselves in that position and inquire from a higher authority because they are always thinking of the benefit of others. Sanat Kumar said, "My dear King Prithu, I am very nicely questioned by you. Such questions are beneficial for all living entities, especially because they are raised by you, who are always thinking of the good of others. Although you know everything, you ask such questions because that is the behavior of saintly persons. Such intelligence is befitting your position." Can we just get in the right position? Okay, so questions and answers. That means relationship, it means exchange, it means benefit for all concerned. And that is the standard of the Srimad Bhagavatam. The Bhagavatam more or less begins with those 10 questions that are asked at the beginning, and then the unfolding of the answers is the rest of the Bhagavatam. It's a human prerogative to be able to ask questions. You don't see that in any other species of life. Yeah? Although, you know, the monkeys are supposed to be the ancestors of human beings, you don't get any monkeys sitting down and having conferences what to speak about other living beings. The specific nature of human life is that we can actually expand our awareness of who we are, why we're here, and ask questions about where we're going, where we came from, and what is the whole meaning of existence. Nobody else is doing that. So only when that exchange is taking place can we say that there is actually human exchange. If the other exchange, asking questions about where is money, where is food, where is a nice house, etc., etc., if that's all that we limit our questions to and our answers to, then we're not actually human beings. This is the specific standard, Atato Brahma Jigyasa. You must, on attainment of this human form, ask the relevant questions and find somebody who's competent to answer them. When the questioner is qualified, and when the person who is being questioned is qualified, then you get a productive result. If you have a fool that goes to a learned person and asks questions, what will he understand? What will come out of that? Nothing. And if you have an intelligent person going to a fool and asking questions, similarly, you'll get no result. There has to be a qualification on both sides. So Sanat Kumara, of course, the four Kumaras, they are highly qualified living beings, most exalted. They were some of the first living beings created or appearing in the universe at the time of Lord Brahma's creation. And they were intelligent enough to not want to get involved in material activities. Therefore, they were cursed. They were requested by their father, now you do this work of propagating living beings throughout the universe. And they were thinking, why should we do that? That's an entanglement. Yeah. You start with one, and then that one becomes two, and then that two becomes four, and four becomes eight, and before you know what you have a whole dynasty that are all, you know, focused on you as the progenitor, and you have a connection with them through that, you know, regeneration activity. And that the end result is you simply become more and more entangled. I was just speaking yesterday with one of the devotees, and she was saying that now, you know, she's getting older, she's thinking about, you know, getting more involved in spiritual activity, but, you know, now the daughter has turned up with two grandsons, and the other one's just got married, and just when she thought that everything was going, is supposed to reduce, it's actually increasing. So this is the business of living in the material world. It's ever expanding and becoming more and more of an entanglement. So at least the four Kumaras, at the very beginning, they said, no, we're not going to get involved in that business. Yeah. Lord Brahma is the original person. He should be obeyed. He's their father. But they refused. And because of their refusal, then they were cursed. Of course, the curse was very beneficial because they were cursed to remain in bodies which don't develop to the point where, you know, the hormonal changes take place and then the sex desire kicks in. That sex desire, of course, is the basis, you know, for material entanglement. So they were fortunate that they were kept in small, young bodies which did not have that transformation, what we call puberty. We all know, as soon as puberty kicks in, that's it, you're finished. Boys and girls, the hormones start, you know, radically changing the nature of the body and the brain and the mind. And then it's almost inevitable that you're impelled towards, you know, material entanglement. So at least the Kumaras were intelligent at the very beginning not to get involved in that. They have these small childlike bodies, but they're actually the greatest sages in the universe. And their only business is to go around and preach the glories of transcendental life and instruct persons who are worthy to be instructed in the real goals of this universe, our situation within it, what it's all for. So that way then, whenever it's needed, they appear as they've come to see Prithu Maharaj. And Prithu Maharaj is exceptionally qualified. Here it's mentioned, Hitatmana, one who desires good for all. So they know that when he asks questions, it's not going to be some, you know, selfish thing that he's going to just ask for his, you know, own welfare and benefit. He's a king, and kings are trained from birth to think about the welfare of others. That is the Kshatriya training. Kshatriya means to protect. So not just protect themselves, but protect many others, hundreds, thousands, even millions. They have to have that qualification. So thinking of the good of others, then whatever questions Prithu Maharaj is going to ask, that will not be just for himself, it will be for all of the citizens under his charge. They'll all get the benefit from that. So this is not some small exchange, this is a very important part of the rule of King Prithu, that now he's going to get direct instruction from the most qualified living beings in the universe about how to run his kingdom. And therefore, only good can come of it. He himself is good, and they are also good. So in that way then, everybody, all the whole universe practically, will benefit from such an exchange. So this is human life. Yeah. Unfortunately, people now, they're being misdirected. There's neither anybody qualified to give the answers, nor anybody qualified to ask the questions. People are unfortunate. Just like a few weeks ago, I was at a yoga course, you know, doing some of the mechanics working there. And so there's about 30 people in the course. And the people that were teaching it, very nice people, and they were very keen to give some philosophy behind, you know, the yoga exercises that they were teaching. The man was quite outspoken in that, you know, he was actually condemning all the different forms of so-called yoga that is sweeping the world now. There are millions of people, I think 16 or 20 million people in America do yoga every day, so-called yoga. But what is that yoga? Just simply some bodily exercise, that's all. And nothing is imparted of any real value. Just, you know, how to keep your body fit and trim, keep your mind alert so you can go out and do more material activities. So this man was condemning that, and he was telling the students, yes, you know, we're doing these exercises to help you to pacify your mind so that you can come to a state of meditation. Yam, niyam, asan, pranayam. Like that. They were going up to the level of pranayama. And they were honest about it, that, you know, what we're doing is just a tiny speck of what yoga is all about. And don't think that you're yogis just because you've come here on a 3-week course. Yeah. We've been teaching it for 30 years and we're not yogis. So it was quite nice. The man was very honest and direct. He said, you know, everything that we do is based on teachings of Patanjali, who is a bona fide personality, and the Bhagavad Gita. So they were very keen to kind of impart some philosophical instruction there, and every class they had 10 minutes where they would talk a little bit about something or other. But what was very apparent was that there were people that had been going there, you know, for years, literally. There was one fellow that I was, we were staying in the same house. He had one room, I had another room. And he had been coming about 8 or 9 times. Every year he comes and he does his yoga, and he's actually teaching yoga in the West. So what was apparent, and there were quite a few others that were doing this or been doing so-called yoga for many years, but they didn't even know the very first thing, that you're not this body. This man was trying to educate them a little bit, that, you know, you have to understand the body's temporary and, you know, it's not the be-all and the end-all. He said, I'm sorry to have to tell you this, that this might come as a shock, you know, that you're not this body. So I could understand some of these people, for many, many years they've been doing yoga, but they don't even understand the very first principle, which is that you're not this body. And nobody's teaching them. This man was saying repeatedly through the classes that, will you learn this from anywhere else when you do your yoga courses? Is anybody else teaching you this? What, that you're not the body? No. Everybody was saying, no, we never heard this before. This is the so-called yogis. Yeah, they don't even know the very first basics. So it's a problem. There are so many people, you know, setting themselves up as teachers and leaders. But what do they actually know? And what to speak about, you know, in material life, you know, the whole propaganda of the material scientists. There was another fellow there. He was an older man, him and his wife, and he runs this huge medical facility in San Francisco. So he you know, been doing yoga for a few years. And we got to chat a little bit. When I suggested that consciousness is the source of matter, he jumped. It was something that he could hardly contemplate, because in the way that he's been trained in the Western system of education, it's drilled into you, you know, that you are this body, that matter is the source of everything. Evolution, it's unthinkable, you know, to even challenge it. The idea of, you know, life coming from matter, it's just absorbed all through their school years, and that framework becomes the whole way that they view the world and themselves. And you just even slightly suggest that that might not be right. Ooh, you know, it's like you can see the conditioning kicking in there. They can hardly hear it, because he was on a yoga course and the yoga teacher was saying, you know, the same thing. But you could see that they have a lot of difficulty just accepting these things. So with that kind of outlook, how will they ask any proper questions? You have to be at least open to the answers. But if you're already prejudiced before you ask the question, then, you know, what will be the fruit of your exchange? These people, they're already, you know, convinced that the Western way of education is the most superior form of education that there's ever been in the world. You know, whatever they're teaching in the West, oh, that's it. This is the pinnacle, you know, of human development and human understanding. So when you already have that kind of prejudice and conditioning, it's very difficult for such persons then, you know, to come to another tradition which gives a completely different view of the world. You know, the Gita and the Bhagavatam. To start, you know, the starting point of the Bhagavad Gita is where Western education leaves off. They have no conception of, you know, the subtle portions of life, the idea of the mind, intelligence, and ego or false ego. That's beyond the scope of any material science, because it's subtle, and because they can't detect it in somewhere or another by experimentation. It doesn't exist. So if you have that mentality, what will you learn? Yeah, what is life? What is it for? Where did you come from? Where are you going? They haven't a clue. They're all bewildered. That's the problem. So even those persons who are supposed to be the biggest philosophers, like Stephen Hawking, these people, they can't answer even the simplest questions. What is life? Yeah, what are we as living beings? This is the first question that we should have. But they can't answer. And these people, you know, are being advertised the greatest mind of, you know, the 21st century or whatever it is. But he can't answer even the simplest points, you know, that somebody coming in our tradition, back to yoga, can immediately wrap off. So asking questions, that's one thing, but then finding a qualified teacher, that's another. Both have to be there, and then there'll be a very pleasing exchange. So Sanat Kumar is very happy with King Prithu. Even before he starts asking, he says, I know you're going to ask good questions because you're a highly qualified individual. You are thinking of the welfare of others. And what is that welfare? Yeah, not some, you know, temporary economic solution to the problems, you know, of the looming recession. Yeah, that's the big question that's going on now in Europe and America right now. Are we headed for recession? That's not the kind of questions and answers that are going to go between Prithu Maharaj and Sanat Kumar. Prithu Maharaj is the king. He's certainly, you know, charged with even the material welfare of his citizens. But that, he knows, will fall into line if the spiritual welfare is taken care of. When people have a proper perspective of who they are, why they're here, what is this, you know, temporary life that we're living in these bodies, then, you know, everything else follows after that, in the wake of that. So, Prithu Maharaj is a real leader of human society. Yeah. He is educated in what the difference is between spirit and matter. Mati means intelligence. Prabhupada defined intelligence as being the ability to discriminate between spirit and matter. And if you can't do that, you're not intelligent. Then maya parita jnana. You may appear to be intelligent, but everything you speak will simply be nonsense. That's all. Bewildered by maya, by illusion. Yeah, you might come out with, you know, volumes and theses and get Nobel Prizes, and but all of everything you speak is simply garbage if you don't know what is spirit and what is matter. That is the beginning point of real intelligence, that discrimination. So Prithu Maharaj, from birth, he's been educated, from his appearance rather, didn't exactly take birth, but from his appearance, he's been educated properly. The real welfare of any living being is spiritual, not material. This body will fall at some point or another. It doesn't matter what you do, it's going to break down and cease to function at some point or another. And we all know that. And as we get older, you know, you realize it more and more. Of course, you could die at any moment, but we really don't believe that, mostly. You know, we tend to think that there's that progression through old age, and then gradually, you know, you just fade away. It doesn't always happen like that. But anyway, the real point is that this body is just a temporary vehicle. And Prabhupada mentions many places that, you know, the body itself is a disease. The material body itself is a disease. That's the disease, that you have one. And then, you know, the malfunctions of that body as you go through the passage of time, oh, we call that disease, but that's simply symptomatic of the real disease, that we think that we are these bodies, and we think that we are part of this material world. So we have to clear up the source, yeah? Not treat the symptoms. We have to get down to the source of our real problems in life and solve them, and that is also intelligence. Intelligence means understanding what the difficulties of life are and coming up with a permanent solution. Shreyas, when Arjuna is faced with, you know, fighting on the battle of Kurukshetra and killing so many relatives and friends and respected elders, his teachers, etc., etc., he becomes completely bewildered. But he has at least enough intelligence, even though he gets to the point he can't function even. He drops his bow, his skin is burning, his hair standing on end, he's crying, he can't, you know, he becomes dysfunctional, as we say nowadays, literally dysfunctional. But at least he has enough presence of mind to ask Krishna that you tell me, Shreyas, what is for my ultimate benefit? Now I'm bewildered, I can't act, so I want some instruction from you how to recover my good state of consciousness, but I want you to give me a permanent solution, not a temporary one. And then the Bhagavad Gita unfolds from that point. So similarly, Prithu Maharaj, he's not interested in hearing, you know, what the latest Wall Street stocks and shares, you know, situation is from the Kumaras. He is not that interested in economic development or any other kind of material development. He wants to know what are the real, you know, solutions to the problems of living in the material world. So that way then, good questions, good answers, and everybody will get the benefit. This Bhagavatam has been around at least 5,000, or, you know, because the stories go back throughout history, millions and billions of years, but at least in its written form, the Bhagavatam's been around for some thousands of years. Yeah, in another few thousand years, this knowledge will still be relevant. Nothing else will be. Everything else that they're teaching the kids in school nowadays, you know, about, I mean, nobody will have probably even heard of America, hopefully, in a few hundred years' time. It will just be a figment of the past. just the same as so many of the great so-called civilizations. You know, the British Empire, the Carthaginian Empire, the Roman Empire, the this empire, the that. Where are they now? Gone. Yeah. But this knowledge remains. Yeah. So we don't want anything shallow, anything temporary. We want something which will provide permanent solutions to the problems that we face living in the material world, and that's what we're going to get from this exchange. Okay, so we'll finish there. Does anybody have any questions or comments? Sadhu Prabhu.
Thank you very much, Sadhu Prabhu. You, in the example that you presented, we could see how an unqualified audience doesn't progress in life. Although, in that case of the yoga class, the teacher was telling them something about the truth about not being devoted. And in that sense, I'm following the purpose, I mean the message of this verse, Srila Prabhupada have created what is the essential element to ask is the environment, which those people in the yoga class couldn't have because they were so much distracted by their so-called duties outside the classes eventually, although maybe intelligent. So we here, we are engaged in the real process of bhakti and it should be 24 hours. Right? And sometimes we find ourselves foolish, obviously, to do, sort of present certain questions. And sometimes, in order to develop humility, we may not pursue some sort of intuition about something that is not deeply understood by us. And maybe, with the effort to become humble, we put it aside. But some, again, the same feeling may arise because we find in Prabhupada's teachings, in his books or lectures, etc., that hint is there. And sometimes it's not that I want to impose my intuition only, but it's clearly explained as the point that sometimes we find some verse that Prabhupada gave very clear purport or actually translation that is being translated in other way, in other form, according to the receiver's inspiration. So how we interact in that sense without feeling the sense of challenging the authority?
Pariprashnena sevaya. Ask questions, but do it in the right mood, submissively, with a service attitude. And then we get, you know, either our own intuitions confirmed, or we get enlightened and receive something that we didn't know before. That's the process. I had an interesting experience actually just last week. I was back in Delhi and I met one gentleman. You know, most of you will know there's a letter that Prabhupada wrote at the end of 1976, which he gives a description of the chandelier for the planetarium that he wants in the new temple. And there's like 15 points. It's the most detailed description that Prabhupada ever gave us of that that planetary chandelier that's going to be put into the temple there. So I met with the man that letter was written to, Mr. Dhani, Dr. Dhani. It had been sent in November 1976. We were not made aware of that letter until 2007. Because that man never came to see Prabhupada, although Prabhupada had invited him to. And the carbon copy disappeared. So we never saw that letter. We didn't know about it until 2007, when Vishuddha Sattva Prabhu suddenly produced it from his portfolio and gave us that. So I had posted that on my website. And in 2010, last year, I suddenly got an email from this Dr. Dhani, who the letter was written to, he was saying, you know, I did a Google on my own name, and then it came up with this letter, and I'd forgotten all about it. I saw it on your website. I'm the same Danny, right? So I made an arrangement. I said, next time I'm in Delhi, let's get together. So we did last Saturday. Nice man. He's 79 years old now. He's retired. Total mental speculator. But he's a nice man. And what had prompted Prabhupada to write this letter to him was that he had read a report on some science meeting that had been held in Delhi. It was in the Times of India. And they had reproduced a talk that Dr. Dani had given about the Vedic cosmos. And it had been put in the Times of India. So then Prabhupada, you know, read that and then wrote to this man asking to meet him. So it never happened. But anyway, he still has a copy of this article that was in the Times of India, so I got that from him. And then as we talked, you know, it just became very obvious that he really doesn't know very much. All speculation, you know, imaginations, this means this and this means that. And there was one gentleman that was with him, probably in his mid to late 40s. He's a PhD, and he's like a student. This man was his mentor, so they had come together. And then as we started talking, you know, I mentioned a couple of points from Bhagavad Gita, and this man told me, this PhD fellow, he mentioned that he reads a chapter of the Bhagavad Gita every night without fail. Yeah, this is his practice, and he's a PhD and all this. He didn't know the first thing. Yeah, all speculation, all, you know, imaginations, but the simple, straightforward points that Prabhupada, you know, hammered into us, they don't know the first thing, and he was amazed. He started asking me all these questions, and I started answering, you know, quote a verse and explain it. And he would look at me, and then he was looking at his mentor, and, you know, I never heard this before, right? And then at one point, he actually stopped, and he asked Dr. Dani, he said, is what he's saying, is that right? And then Dr. Dani, he was being very polite, so he said, well, he said, I always said I'm just a researcher. He said, there are other, you know, explanations that are, you know, probably okay as well. So, you know. But the thing was that this man's, you know, a PhD. He reads the Gita every single night, and he doesn't understand a word of it. And I was thinking, how fortunate we are, you know, that we met Srila Prabhupada. You know, same as these people, these yoga people. I just had 3 weeks of hearing them every day explaining, you know, some of the basics from the Bhagavad Gita. But what is their idea? Kaivalya. Right? This is bhakti? Yes. Oh, very nice. You worship Radha and Krishna. They're God. Shiva and Parvati, they're also God. Ganesh is God. This one's God. Now, whatever God, that's the nice thing about Hinduism. You can pick out whatever God you like, you know, according to your fancy. And then, you know, bhakti is just another path. It's just a means. Yeah? There's, you know, hatha yoga, there's this one, there's that. And bhakti. But the end result, oh, Kaivalya. And this fellow I was going to say, that I was staying in the same house with, who's been teaching yoga now for years. And he's been coming to this particular course for at least 9 years. So, you know, I asked him, what's your goal? And, oh, well, you know, I'm looking forward to becoming, you know, to getting Kaivalya and become a little twinkle of light. That was his goal in life, to become a twinkle of light in the Kaivalya. And then later on, when we were getting to the end of the course, he said, well, I'm looking forward to going back to Delhi and having a nice chicken tikka. Right? Because on the course, they insist you can't eat meat, you can't drink or take intoxicants. So it's which is good. But this guy's been coming for 9 years running. He teaches yoga, right? And he's looking forward to a nice chicken tikka as soon as he gets to Delhi. And then, you know, he thinks he's going to get Kaivalya, right? So, you know, this is the problem. They're not, even the people that are teaching something, and Patanjali yoga is a system, it's a bona fide system, but this idea that there's this impersonal goal, you know, merging into the absolute, that's actually, that's a misunderstanding, but that's what they're teaching. So even these people, and I had three or four of them at different points come to me and asking me questions, you know, about chanting, about yoga, and etc. They were very happy actually to hear some clear explanations. So I just saw very starkly in those two incidences, the yoga course and the PhD guy in Delhi, that, you know, Prabhupada is practically the only person who really knew what was going on. Because his god brothers also, but they weren't going out and spreading that all over the world, but Prabhupada was. You know, so how fortunate we are that we had such a spiritual master who knew exactly, you know, what is the difference between spirit and matter and could explain it, you know, and allowed us to ask so many different questions and was always encouraging us to grow and progress in our spiritual realizations. So, you know, you need the right teacher. Even if you have inspirations or, you know, good questions, if you don't have the right person to ask them or to present them to, then, you know, it will remain a bewilderment, that's all. You'll never really be sure. But Prabhupada was just very straight, very direct. Yeah, again, this guy that was running the medical facility in San Francisco, I gave him Bhagavad Gita as it is just to read. So he read the introduction. And the thing that he politely, you know, had problems with was the fact that Prabhupada was speaking as if he knew what he was talking about. Right? You know, that he was so clear and direct and said, this is it, this is what it means. You know, they're not used to that. They think that's some kind of arrogance, that you can actually get up and say, this is the truth. Their tradition is that nobody knows anything and therefore everybody can ask and speculate, you know, and the students should surpass the teacher and come out with a new theory or go beyond. That this is their tradition. So when somebody like Srila Prabhupada comes along and says, you know, Bhagavad Gita as it is, it's a bit too much for them to chew. They don't like that.
And if you allow me, in one purport, Prabhupada actually explained how the Vedas are not dogmatic. And I think that this is the greatest of Prabhupada, that never presented anything used to be digested forcibly. You know, he gave all the references and all the shastras, quoting constantly and by his own example. But in this case also, we have our own individuality and way of interpreting Prabhupada's message. And you know very well, because we have discussed so much about this famous temple of Vedic planetarium, and I observed how you use the word chandelier. When in that letter, the word chandelier is not noticed, I mean, not even addressed. But the point is that still, my original question stands in the sense that I intuitively, it's not that I'm the less intelligent in this place, but the intuition comes that the chandelier in itself, it brings more of an impersonal description than, rather than what Prabhupada, you know, in detail describes in the letter. I had approached with my humility. You know?
Okay, well, this could be a technical discussion. But Prabhupada does say that speculation is not banned, right? There's a good kind of speculation and there's a bad kind of speculation. Usually we say, you know, don't speculate. You know, Prabhu, stop speculating. Right? But Prabhupada mentions that there is a bona fide way to speculate, in that a truth is spoken, and then you can speculate how it's true. So in other words, you accept the essence of it, and then you try to understand how it's true. And there may be many different ways or approaches to that truth, which will, you know, enhance your understanding of it. So that kind of speculation is okay. But if you presented a truth and then you speculate whether it's actually true or not, that kind of speculation is forbidden. So let's say in the example you're giving, because Prabhupada, you know, gave this description of what he wanted in the main dome, but he did also mention, you know, a chandelier-like structure. So you can interpret that in different ways. As long as you get the same result, it would be fine. We're not saying there's only one way to do something, but you have to pick the way that seems to be, you know, the most practical doable. Yeah. That's all I'm going to say on that one. Yes, Guru. Just go on the microphone.
Hare Krishna. Can we say the intuition, is it closer to the spiritual intelligence?
Yes, Prabhupada mentions that, I suppose, like intuition or intelligence is the form direction of the super soul. The act of taking help, right, from intuition is it's an indication, it's the form direction of the super soul. In other words, if you want to define intuition as being a process whereby you open up your mind and intellect to receive information from a higher source, which is generally how we define intuition. It's something that comes to us. It's not a product of our own thinking and our own mental constructs, but it's something that enters into our consciousness, you know, and gives us information that we didn't previously have. At least that's the way I would define intuition. And that is indicative of the presence of the super soul, who understands, you know, where we're at, what our consciousness is, what we know, what we don't know, and then feeds us inspiration or intuition or information. Yeah, it's coming in. Yeah, that's the point. Intuition. Information is coming in. It's not something that's being produced by us. So that's intuition. But we may get, you know, all kinds of things that we think are spiritual intuitions, things coming in, but we need to verify whether they're actually fact or not. Therefore, whatever questions we have, based on the realizations or intuitions that we've had, should be placed before the spiritual master for confirmation. When we get a confirmation, then we can build on that. And then there may be a point at which we become so advanced that we can directly ask Krishna. Prabhupada was doing that. There's a conversation that he had with a newspaper reporter on July the 14th, 1976 in New York, where this man wanted to know, you know, how do you decide, how you make your decisions? Like, you know, he was talking particularly about the appointment of his GBC men. And he was asking, you know, he wanted to get to the essence of how Prabhupada was interacting with Krishna, you know, for making various decisions about the formation and development of ISKCON. And at one point, Prabhupada tells him, you know, that, well, the devotee asks Krishna and he tells him. And Rameshwara was there, and he had tried to explain to this reporter. He said, it's like this. Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita that he is the intelligence in men. So if with our intelligence we see that somebody is fit for such and such a service, that's Krishna telling us. Prabhupada said, no. It is not indirect. He said, I ask him and he tells me. He said, that is for the minor devotees. Right? Intelligence. That is for the minor devotees. But he said, you know, a real devotee asks Krishna and he tells him. So when we get to that point, that's then we'll be okay. If we're not on that level, then, you know, you have some intuition or some intelligence about something. Get a confirmation. That's the best thing. By experience, of course, you learn so many things as well, what's to be done and what's not to be done. But for higher inspirations and intuitions, we must get a confirmation. And therefore, the Shastra is there. Refer back always to Shastra. And refer back to those who were qualified to present Shastra. Well, Shastra is there, but like this fellow, you know, in Delhi, the PhD, is reading Bhagavad Gita every night, the same words that we read. Of course, not with Prabhupada's purports, only the Sanskrit. But what is he understanding? Because he's not, you know, even if he has some inkling of what's being said, he's so bewildered and confused by what other people have told him, who are not self-realized souls, that he actually, you know, he'll go on reading the Bhagavad Gita every night for the next, you know, 100 lifetimes. And he'll still not understand what it is. But you hear from Srila Prabhupada in 5 minutes, you can understand immediately what's going on. So the Shastra is there, Guru is there, the Sadhus are there, these are our authorities. And we always submit our realizations and intuitions for confirmation to our authorities in that way. Is that all right? Okay, it's getting late. We'll finish there. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.